WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 10th of April. This morning I'm going to have a double feature. I'm going to start things off again with the Green Hornet. It's a collection I purchased a month and a half ago. This one's titled Words and Music, starring Al Hodge as Britt Reed in the Green Hornet. And also, I got figured out who plays Kato. His name was Tokitaro Hayashi, but James Jewell changed his name for professional reasons to Raymond Toyo. Kato would come under some scrutiny during the World War II for his ethnic origins. He's perceived to be Japanese, but actually he was Filipino. This episode is called Words and Music, with an original air date of the 1st of June, 1939. This is Arthur in the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening.
Green Hornet. Game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. Faithful valet Kato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. The Green Hornet strikes again.
We'll begin tonight's exciting story in just a moment.
Adventure, Words and Music. The events and characters depicted in this drama are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Let successful radio, talkie, and recording artists show you the glamorous road to fame and fortune. Write the words and music for a song hit. Let the three J's, Joe, Jack, and Jim, do the rest. We publish and distribute. The guarantee to put your song in the hands of leading movie producers, orchestras, and radio stations. Get out of the rut. Write a song.
Yeah. How's that sound for an ad?
Joe, you ought to quit music publishing and go in for ad writing. Look at him.
Sounds good, Joe. But you ought to have something about Sunflower Free Booklet and full details.
Oh, I got that here, right down at the bottom.
Now, the idea is that we'll run this in all the cheap magazines with a blank to be sent in. We've been involved in this racket long enough. Now it's time to branch out.
That's the idea. Get into a nationwide business.
Hold on, Jack. Maybe we should get a lawyer to look things over. We'll be using the mails, you know.
Hey, talk to the lawyer, Jim. We aren't breaking any laws.
What about that line, submitting songs to radio stations, dance bands, and all that?
We will. We'll submit them. If they toss them in the wastebasket, that's not our worry.
Okay.
Another thing the lawyer said.
What's that?
We ought to protect each other. I got some contracts here, see?
Contracts for what?
We all sign them. It's a partnership agreement, so we don't break up.
Break up?
Yeah. Suppose one of us lands a job with a radio sponsor or something.
None of us could. You know that, Jake. We worked as a harmony trio. We're washed up as far as that stuff goes.
Maybe your pipes were never good for solo stuff, but Jim can do a good tenor.
Oh, not me. I'm for the publishing racket. There's big dough in it. And we don't have to worry about commercial contracts running out.
Not the same. We should have an agreement. If one of us pulls out or dies, the other two get his share of the work.
That's fair enough, Jack. Sounds all right to me.
I thought it'd be okay with you two. If we're going into big business, we might as well be organized right.
And what about this ad? Is it okay with you two to go ahead and run it?
Sure.
The sooner we get started, the sooner the dough will begin rolling in. Advertising for the 3 J's was widely circulated throughout the country. And a few weeks later, cash came pouring into the publisher's office with every mail delivery. Hundreds of hopeful young people awaited the verdict of the Racketeer Trio, just as Waldo Fielding did.
Any mail for me today, Mother?
Yes, Waldo. There's a letter from that song publisher.
Where is it? Gee, I can hardly wait to hear what they say about my poem. Wouldn't it be swell if they put music to it and published?
There's the letter, Waldo.
Yes. If I could just get the start. Well, look at what some people make out of songs. I heard that sometimes a guy makes as much as... Ma!
What is it, Walt?
They'll accept my poem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll like it. They'll have one of their best men write the tune, and then they'll publish it and see that it goes to all the radio stations and the movie studios and the dance bands. Oh, boy, I knew I could do it.
But, Waldo, won't they expect a lot of money for doing all that?
No. They say here that they'll take the chance on royalties. If I don't make anything, they won't make anything either. All I have to do is pay for the copyright and the printing cost of mailing.
But how much is that?
Well, I suppose it'll seem like a lot to you, Mom. It's about $50. But that's not much, really. Why, I'll bet a lawyer would charge almost that much just to get the copyright for me. And it might bring me in as much as $500,000.
But, Waldo, $50, we haven't got that
much. I'll get it. I'll sell my camera, and I can get something for my banjo. The chances are that Steve will pay a little for my shotgun. I'll get the money. Don't you worry about it, Ma. You just wait. I'll be rich one of these days. I'm going to start on another song poem right away.
Several more weeks elapsed, and Joe, Jack, and Jim found a veritable gold mine in their venture. They expanded in their advertising, moved into larger offices, and then one day...
Hey, Joe. Jack.
Yeah, Jim?
The Better Business people have been checking up.
So what?
They don't like our way of doing business.
Oh, they don't, huh? Well, isn't that too bad? What are they going to do about it?
They'll probably publish some warnings about us.
Ah, the suckers that send lyrics and tunes to us won't listen to warnings. They're so convinced that their stuff is good, they'll believe whatever they want to believe. That's the psychology of this business.
I'm just passing on what that bird from the business bureau told me. He claims we're running a racket.
It isn't a racket at all. We take a certain fee for publishing a song. Agree to secure a copyright, furnish a tune, a lyric, whichever is required, and have a certain number of copies printed and distributed.
And we do all those things.
Certainly. We fulfill our part of the contract to the letter. There isn't a law in the country that can touch us.
But it won't do us any good to have newspaper ads calling attention to our way of doing business.
Well, we can't stop it, can we?
Well, I thought if it was agreeable to you two, I'd make a few promises and stall things off for a while. Really, just getting a foothold.
An ad in the paper in one city isn't going to hurt us much. Our business is nationwide. Let them advertise. Can't hurt us.
Okay, Jack, it's up to you.
And Joe?
I agree with Jack. Now, what about the tunes for this batch of stuff that came in today?
You got it all sorted according to meter, haven't you?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's have it. I'll wrap out a few little jingles and give them some music.
Seems to me it's kind of risky using the same tune for half a dozen different songs.
Nah, the stuff never amounts to anything. Nobody will ever hear it. What's the difference? I can't think of 150 new tunes every day.
You keep the stuff pretty well scattered, though, don't you, Jim?
Sure. For example, I use that tune, Moonlight Love, on a poem of a guy in New York, one in St. Louis, maybe one in Omaha, one in the West Coast. That saved me writing four different tunes, see?
It'd be kind of tough if the fellas ever got together and found they had the same tune.
Fat chance of that. Well, what would happen if one of the songs became a hit?
A hit?
That's a good one, Joe. How can any of this stuff ever be a hit? We'll see to it that it isn't.
I wanted to speak to you.
We're in conference.
What do you want here?
My name is Fielding. Waldo Fielding. I sent you a song a few weeks ago. Remember the name?
Sorry, Fielding. We're in conference now. We can't be disturbed.
I've been trying for 4 days to see you. I spent all my money.
What do you want to see us about, kid?
My song.
Did you get your copies of it?
Yes, sir, but I wondered if there hadn't been some sales made.
Mm. Where are you from?
Simmons Corners.
Well, what are you doing here in the big city?
Well, I thought my song would be selling, so I came here. I thought I might be able to do better if I was working closer with you.
You see the girl in the outer office and ask her to check up on the sales of your song. But I doubt if it's had any sales yet. You know, it takes time to put the new things over.
Well, I thought I might make a personal appearance with an orchestra or something.
We'll send for you when we want you for that, kid.
I did speak to the girl.
What'd she tell you?
She said that there hadn't been any sales yet.
Well, that's the answer, then. Why don't you go back to Simmons Corners or wherever your home is and stay there till we send for you?
All right. Look, there must be some sales. If you sent that song out to all the people you claim you did, we have meeting in 2 days. I gotta have some money.
Well, what do you want us to do? Dish it out of our pockets? We're running a publishing house, not a traveler's aid. But,
yes, sir.
We sent you 50 copies of the song. Why don't you go out in the street corner and try to peddle them or something? That's one way to drum up business.
Yes, sir. Want to buy a song? Say, mister, do you want to buy a copy of my song?
Not today.
Buy a copy of my song, lady.
Get out of my way, sir.
Look, mister, do you want to take a copy of the newest song you hit home?
Hey, you. What are you doing there blocking the traffic?
Well, officer, I didn't mean anything.
What's this you're trying to peddle? Music?
Yes, sir. I'm trying to sell a song.
Maybe you'd better find out something about the laws of this town. You can't stand on street corners interfering with pedestrians, peddling music. Got a license?
License? No, sir, I haven't.
You'd better come down to the station house with me, I guess.
No. No, please, I didn't know.
Come on, kid. You can't get away with this sort of thing. Hey, suffering catfish, the kid's passed out. What have you got there, Doyle? Lowry, why is it that you're every place I am?
I learned when I first started in as reporter to the Sentinel, Doyle, that if I keep close enough to you, I see things happen. Yeah, what's the matter with the kid? You crown him with your nightstick?
No. I just started to take him in for peddling music on the street, and he passed out cold on me.
The kid looks half starved.
He does at that.
How long is it since he's eaten?
I don't know. Here, Lowry, stay with him till I call the wagon.
Yeah, maybe I'll get a story here. This looks like human interest stuff.
Ed Lowry, the star reporter of the Daily Sentinel, came into the office of the young publisher, Britt Reed, a couple of hours later. Miss Case, Reed's secretary, said...
Mr. Reed's not in now, Lowry.
But I gotta see him about a special story.
He's still out.
Where?
How the dickens do I know where he goes? I'm the last one he tells. That's discouraging.
Discouraging? Hey, now listen, Casey. Don't get ideas that the boss is interested in you. He travels with the 400.
Don't be idiotic.
As far as Britt Reed is concerned, you're just part of the office furniture.
I do wish he'd settled down long enough so I could write to his father with some feeling of confidence.
And what's the trouble?
Oh, just as soon as I write Mr. Reed and tell him that Britt's taking an interest in the Daily Sentinel, he disappears.
Lady, if I had his dough, I'd never come to the office.
During the past week, he's been out to some affair almost every night. He's bored with the office again.
Well, he'll get his fill of nightlife and then settle down again.
Yes, until he gets his fill of the newspaper business again.
Oh, here he is. Say, boss, I ran into Doyle, the big cop, today.
Oh, yeah?
And he had a kid in tow. The kid had passed out from hunger. But when Doyle spotted him first, he was trying to peddle a song he'd written.
A song?
And it ties right in with the racket we've been working on.
What racket was that, Larry?
Music publishing. You know those wildcat publishers that call themselves Joe, Jack, and Jim, the three J's?
Who are they?
A broken-down vocal trio that hit a good racket. I got a first-hand story from one of the victims of the racket. The poor kid got just enough encouragement from them to quit his job and leave home. Here's the song he wrote. I brought a copy for you.
Leave it with Miss Cash. I'll take it with me when I get home.
Well, what about my story? I got pictures of the kid.
Speak to the city editor about it. He's paid to handle that sort of thing.
But maybe there's editorial meat in it.
Gunnigan's the best judge for that.
Oh, hang it all.
That's right, Larry.
Well, look here, boss. I
get my Gunnigan, Larry.
Okay. I'll take it to Gunnigan. There's the words and music.
Mr. Reed.
Yes, Miss Kay?
I'm going to stick my neck out again. Isn't there something we can do to make the office more attractive for you?
Oh, no, it's quite all right, Miss Kay.
Then why can't... Why won't you...
Oh, I understand, Miss Kay. You're concerned again because I'm spending too little time around here.
Frankly, I am, Mr. Reed. I'd hate to keep writing your father that you're...
I'm sorry. But you'll have to admit that newspaper work hasn't a great deal of adventure.
It might have.
Oh, yes, Miss Case, it might have.
There was plenty of excitement while the Green Hornet was so active.
Well, it was, wasn't it?
I wonder if the Hornet has been killed.
Killed? Why, Miss Case?
We haven't had a story about a Hornet adventure in quite a while.
That's true.
He may have been killed, or he may have Well, he retired.
I doubt if the Green Hornet would retire, Miss Case.
Well, perhaps then the police and public have been so greatly aroused that the Hornet doesn't risk making another appearance.
That's quite possible.
I never saw you more interested in the newspaper than while the Green Hornet was running wild.
Well, you must have met the Green Hornet furnished news.
He certainly did. Mr. Reed, there's just as much excitement of everyday life if he could only realize it.
For example?
For example, that lad that Lowry tried to tell you about. Waldo Fielding. A fierce human interest. Poor chap that falls for racketeers. Quits his job in the little home community. Comes to the big city, goes hungry, is misled and victimized by these fake music publishers.
Isn't there something the law can do about publishers of that sort?
If there were, the law would be doing it. But they stay inside the law, Mr. Reed. According to Lowry, they have a contract. And they fulfill the terms of the contract. So the law is helpless.
Yeah, I've heard about the racket, Miss Case.
Aren't you going into your office?
Well, no, I think I'll leave for the day. It's after four.
But, Mr. Reed...
I'll take the along with me just to satisfy Lowry.
Very well.
Yeah, by the way.
You will stop in then tomorrow.
Oh, yes, I'll probably stop in.
The Green Hornet would only start up again, and perhaps Britt Reed would become interested in the publication of news.
Curtain falls on the first act of our Green Hornet adventure. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments to continue our story. Britt Reed went directly from his office to his apartment. He was uneasy and restless, and only Cato, his faithful valet, realized the real cause of the uneasiness.
You're right, Cato. I do feel handcuffed, hammered, tied down. If there was some way the Hornet could get at this music publishing racket, I'd go out.
That's a risk, Mr. Baird.
Oh, risk be confounded. There's a risk in anything, Cato.
Yes, Mr. Baird.
I can't find any way it can be broken up. Not even if we do use the role of the Green Hornet to get at them.
Is it big?
It's nationwide. Those three crooks, Joe, Jack, and Jim, have thousands of people all over the country sending money to them. Money that won't bring a thing except false encouragement and heartbreak.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, look at tonight's settlement. Look at that warning from the Better Business Bureau. They wanted to buy a few inches. I gave them a quarter of a pledge. But do you think that'll stop people from being made victims? Not on your life. I even ran one of the songs, a typical song, copyrighted and published by Joe, Jack, and Jim, to show the stuff they called good. Cato, what haven't it just occurred to me?
What is it?
I have an idea, Cato. Life's going to be exciting after all. This may be the entering wedge. Maybe this is what the Green Hornet's been waiting for.
And for the business people, Cato.
It shows a typical song published by that firm of Joe, Jack, and Jim.
Yes, sir.
And the music for this is the same tune that was used by that young chap Lowry brought in a story about.
It is.
It definitely is. I don't know a great deal about music, but I do know that much. Do I have an engagement for tonight?
Fair call, Mr. Baird.
Cancel it, then. We're going to make other plans.
Why are they?
This may give me the lead I need to smash that publishing firm. Joe, Jack, and Jim. Well, we'll see if they're staying within the law.
And what can we do?
Do? Go to the office. I want to look around there for a while. And if my suspicions are correct, we'll hold a meeting of the firm.
The firm?
Joe, Jack, and Jim. Come on. We're taking out the Black Beauty.
Britt Reed went through a secret panel in the rear of his clothes press. And then by means of a passage between the walls of the apartment building, he reached a small door that opened into the loft of an old, supposedly abandoned livery stable. It was here, unknown to everyone, that the sleek black car of the Green Hornet was housed.
Is the car ready, Cato?
Yes, sir.
All right, get in. Mask?
Here, in compartment.
Gas weapon?
Here.
Good enough. I want to telephone Joe, Jack, and Jim, and I can do that from their own office later on this evening.
Yes, sir.
Now, let's get going.
Approached the entrance of the office building where a man stood smoking a pipe.
Offices are all closed now, mister.
I don't want to hurt you.
What have you done, Hornet?
That'll hold you for an hour. If I need more time, I'll give you some more gas.
Dragging the unconscious form of the watchman inside the building, the Green Hornet left him in a corner, then ran the elevator to the 10th floor. Half an hour later, the three J's had a phone call at their apartment.
I suppose that's just another one of these would-be writers calling for information on his song here. Answer, Jack.
Hello?
Oh, I wish we'd given that feeling kid little dough.
Oh, stop harping about him, Jim.
Yeah. Just passing on the street like he did. Hunger. That won't do us any good.
Well, it won't hurt us any.
Yeah?
For the love of Pete, forget him. He just won.
Yeah.
He should have come to the city in the first place.
Maybe you're right, Joe.
That'll be swell.
Who's he got on the phone?
I don't know.
Looks as if it's something pretty good.
Yes, sir. Right away. Hey, fellas, we're set to really go places.
Who is that?
A publisher.
Publisher?
Magazine publisher. One of those cheap picture mags. He's in town for the evening and wants to talk to us about running a picture story of our business.
Yeah? Hey, that would be swell publicity.
Wouldn't it, though?
That'll offset what the Sentinel has done.
More than offset it. It's a national magazine.
When do you see him?
Right away. He asked if I couldn't meet him in our office tonight.
Tonight?
Yeah, and let him see what sort of picture story could be run.
Good, we'll go with you.
Yeah, come on, let's start.
This is the break of a lifetime.
Jack and Jim rushed in a cab to their office building and found the front door open.
Watchman must be on the first floor.
Yeah, that'll save us waiting for the elevator.
Hey, Larry! Where are you?
He isn't on the first floor. The elevator's just coming down now.
You shouldn't leave the front door open like that.
Don't worry about it.
Well, Larry, you're covered.
What in place?
Mass, the Green Hornet.
One of you can run this elevator. Get in there, or I'll forward you up where the night watchman is.
You killed him, huh?
Get up, boy.
Don't shoot, don't shoot.
Well, what are you after?
Up to your office. Get going now. The 10th floor, you know.
Stop waving that gun around.
I'll stop by letting you have it at the first sign of interruption.
I'll shoot it. No! Jim!
Let that warn you two.
Shot him in cold blood.
Yeah. How do you like it? Leave him right where he is. You open that door and get to your office.
What are you going to do?
You'll find, Step along there.
There's a light there.
I left it. You needn't think about the magazine publisher because I was the one who found you. I took the liberty of using your own telephone.
I have keys.
You won't need them. I've unlocked the door and everything else that needs unlocking.
Now what?
Sit down in there.
What's all this stuff?
Your so-called song hit.
Yeah, I see.
A couple of them have possibilities, haven't they, Jack?
Why, sure they have.
Suppose the Green Hornet were to steal one of them. Let's just suppose there would be a lot of publicity about the Green Hornet shooting two men, maybe more, to get possession of one specific song. What would happen to the sale of that song?
Hey, that's right.
It would become a hit of the week. Every band would use it, every radio station would be featuring it on a song and bring thousands and thousands of dollars in royalties.
Maybe we can make a deal.
Before I finish talking to you, crooks, you won't want that sort of thing to happen.
What?
Why not?
Look here.
Tower gonna be broke. You're going to be smashed to a finish.
Broke?
Smashed. I've already addressed a few envelopes, and I'll see that the rest are addressed. There they are. Take a look at them.
I don't understand.
You will. Take a look at those three sheets of music I've laid out for you.
What about it?
How about that music?
We did. Well, what of it?
And who secured copyrights?
We did.
Every one of these songs can be made into a hit tune with the right promotion. I think I can see that it gets that promotion. I've already explained how.
Well, a hit is what
you can't afford a hit. Suppose, for example, this number becomes a hit. What do you suppose the authors of these other songs with the same music would do?
They'd sue, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'd probably sue.
There's probably a dozen other poets who've been given the same melody for their song. They'd all start lawsuits. You two'd be dragged through every court in the country. Your whole racketeering business would be laid out in the open. Can you stand having a sensational song hit?
I don't know.
No, you can't. That's why I came here.
It was a mistake.
And that's it. It was a mistake.
Mistake?
The printers made a mistake. They got the words and music.
And it's worth them. I could go through your files and show you plenty of the same sort of mistakes. Sit down at that desk.
What do you want?
Money. Lots of money. Here's your checkbook. I have to notice your bank balance there. You can write a lot of checks.
Checks?
I said checks.
For who?
Make out the first to Harvey Dale. D-A-L-E. According to your records, he's paid in $150. That's the amount you send him.
And who else?
Start writing.
I'll do it.
Oh, no. We'll have Jack do it. He's the one whose signature makes those checks worth something. Go on now, start writing.
Now you see here.
Right.
How far are you going?
As far as your bank balance will allow. $200 to go to Mrs. Agnew, $100 to each of the people on this list, $75 to these people. And there's the list of those who get $50 each.
Harvey, broke. I can't afford all that.
You can't afford not to pay up. You'll afford it a whole lot better than these people contributed to your success. And there's another thing, Jack.
Oh, Robin, Steve.
Shut up! They said there was another thing. We may have to overdraw your bank account considerably.
I can't.
You better convert some of the bonds you hold to cover the checks you make out tonight.
I can't.
Why don't you trade in some life insurance? If you don't cover those checks, you'll mighty soon find yourself not only in court, but eventually in jail. What would a jury made of people who read all about your racket in the magazines and newspapers give you? Take your choice, Rat. Go broke and stay free, or go broke and go to jail. And make out checks until you get the writer's cramp. And see that those checks clear the bank.
By first one threat, then another, the Green Hornet compelled the publisher to make out checks for his own money. And then...
That's as far as your cash will go. I'll see to it that these envelopes are mailed.
You can't get away with it.
No? Well, let me explain that I can still make one of your songs a hit. The song that Jim gave his life to keep from the Green Hornet. The song that has some hidden significance to the Green Hornet. One small bit of the song torn and found in the clenched fist of the latest victim of the Hornet's weapon.
Well, Jim,
I'm taking them with me. I know whether or not those checks clear the bank. If they don't, Jim will be found with this emblem plastered to his forehead. The mark of the Green Hornet. And this part of this song clenched in his fist.
Wait, wait. If we don't stop payment, if those checks go through...
That will have nothing but poverty to worry you. And don't try another racket like this one. The Green Hornet can make one of your songs a hit at any time. Only the next time, it might be one of you who furnishes the clenched fist.
Leaving the two racketeers in their office, the Hornet took the elevator to the first floor, dragged the still unconscious man to the rear door of the building, and put him into the car.
That'll do, Cato.
What'll we do, Riddle?
We'll have to keep him under cover and these checks clear the bank. And then, Cato, we can let him go.
Feeling kid got a refund from Joe, Jack, and Jim. That's news.
Yes, and the mark of the Green Hornet was on the letter that went with it.
Yeah, that's a page one story. The Hornet has stepped out again. I wish I had all the details.
But that's not the biggest thing. Mr. Reed was in Brighton early this morning. He's a newspaper man again. He's been working like a Trojan all day, trying to run down some leads on the Hornet from that information he gathered.
He is?
Yeah, but it won't last. Well, it's certain that he'll lose interest again if the Green Hornet goes back into seclusion.
But what if the Green Hornet was to be captured?
I'm afraid Britt Reed would lose interest in the Sentinel in that case, too.
These popular radio dramas, created by George W. Trendle, are a copyrighted feature of the Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used...
Okay, that was Words and Music, The Green Hornet, with an original air date of the 1st of June, 1939. It's interesting, because the Lone Ranger was Britt Reed's great uncle. But again, Al Hodge played Britt Reed in The Green Hornet. Tokitaro Hayashi played Kato. I guess J. Edgar Hoover supposedly took exception to the original intro, and they had to revamp it to say public enemies who would try and destroy America. Instead, originally it said public enemies that even the G-men cannot reach. So I guess they had to rewrite that introduction there. Okay, we're going to go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation for a second. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Medford. Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. For the second half of the double bill, we're going to have A Frontier Gentleman. Daddy Buck Bucks is the title of this one, starring John Daner, who's created, written, and directed by Anthony Ellis, a one-man band who'd go on to write for television. The original air date of this particular episode is the 4th of May, 1958.
In Cheyenne, I met the richest man in the West. I also met Willie Ringo and was given a railroad train. This is how it happened.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. In just 1 minute, we will bring you this latest report from the Frontier Gentlemen.
I'm Irma Dutro, color stylist for O'Brien Paints. Our musical theme hardly needs introduction. Just as the many instruments blend into this symphony, so O'Brien blends many pigments into the newest fashion-right colors for your home, giving more color per color. We have selected O'Brien's exciting new colors of the year after consulting many leading decorators and home furnishings experts of the country. And because all these colors are decorator approved, you are assured of rich, authentic new colors for your own home. Your nearest O'Brien paint dealer, listed in the yellow pages of your phone book, has a free color chip folder for you. He'll help you select O'Brien paints in these exclusive new colors of the year for both inside and outside your home. Stop in and see him soon.
Now, starring John Daner. This is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
Cheyenne, Wyoming Territory. Here, for the first time in months, I have seen a railroad once again, and here I have had my first glimpse of the capital of a vast cattle ranching area. The town itself is a sprawling maze of streets, thriving business establishments. One feels the vitality which springs in no small part from the presence of that slender but tough link between East and West, the railroad. 2 days after my arrival, I met a gentleman by the name of Kerry Chase. He was editor and owner of the Daily Press, and insisted that I join him for lunch at the Cheyenne Club.
There's probably more Englishmen at the Cheyenne Club than you'll find in the rest of the country.
Oh, really?
Sure. I tell you, Kendall, this cattle business is the biggest thing that's hit the West. Bigger than all your mining. Lots of English money in it, too. And your countrymen are over here to protect your investments.
Well, dear, tell you the truth, Mr. Chase, I didn't come to Cheyenne to write about my countrymen. I'm here to write about yours.
Well, you'll meet all kinds at the club. If you're lucky, you might get to see Buck Wharton. Guess you heard of him.
No, I don't think I have.
Just about the richest man in the West. They say he's worth $10 million, and that's just from cattle. Yeah, he'd make a fine story for you. Of course, it depends on whether he likes you or not. Got to get him in the right mood. Real important man in these parts, I tell you.
Young man?
Buck Wharton, 75 if he's a day. Claims to be 60, but don't you believe it. Wicked old devil. Married to the prettiest little thing you ever saw. Little Minnie. Say, he found her in Denver. She was a dancer in a traveling theatrical show. Buck took one look at her and the dance she was doing and married her the next day. That's how the story goes.
Do they both live in Cheyenne?
On and off. She's here with him now. Oh, here we are.
Afternoon, Mr. Chase.
Afternoon, Jasper. Buck Wharton here?
Yes, sir. He's in the bar.
Fine. This is Mr. Kendall. He's going to have lunch with me.
Yes, sir. That's fine. I'll get you a table, sir.
Why don't we go in the bar, Kendall? Make any kind of a drink you want. Even a cocktail. Though I wouldn't advise it if you drink with old Buck. He's a red-eye man himself.
No, that's a little too early for me. But I'd like to meet Mr. Wharton, if he's in the mood.
Sure. Don't mind the way he talks. Sometimes he gets a little... Well, you'll see.
Oh, I said, listen to me, you jerk down little organ puddin' foot. I can buy you and your whole shirt tail outfit, and it wouldn't mean no more to me than spit. Why, man, I own Texas. I own Texas. That's what I said, boy. Buy them out or stomp them out. That's the way I made my money. Now, you boys take my advice. If they won't sell to you, just stomp on them. Just stomp on them. Yes, sir.
Hello, boys. Buck? I'd like you to meet J.B. Kendall, correspondent for the London Times.
Gentlemen?
I'm Buck Wharton, mister, and there's two things I hate. Sodbusters and sheep punchers. And if you're either one of them, get out of my sight.
He writes for the London Times, Buck.
Who asked you, Chase? You got more lip than a muley cow. Ain't nothing I hate worse than a leaky mouth. Sit down, mister. I reckon you want to ask me how come I'm the richest son of a gun in the West. All right, boys. This is a private party. Roll your wheels. Go on, kid. Sit down. Sit down. You too, Chase. Sit down. What you boys drinking?
Whiskey.
No, nothing for me, thank you.
Listen to me, boy. I ain't never yet trusted a man who don't drink. There's something all fired wrong. Man who don't drink drags a long loop. Jasper!
Yes,
three whiskeys.
Yes, sir.
Handle your name, huh?
Right.
Well, I don't mind doing business with you English fellas. Takes you a long time to talk turkey, though. Now, you take them range pirates who's just sitting here. They ain't cattlemen. I can buy and sell them 100 times. Cattlemen.
Have you been in the cattle business all your life, Mr. Wharton?
Have I been in the... Listen to me, boy. I was one of the first ever to drive a herd up in the border into Dodge. Gosh, I wasn't nothing but a saddle stiff in them days, but after a while, I got tired of working for somebody else. Started out on my own, all by myself. Bought me a herd of kettle-bellied critters and run them up to Abilene. Made enough from them to buy me a bigger herd. I was a made man, yes, sir.
Here, your whiskeys, Mr. Buck, sir.
Leave the bottle, leave the bottle. You got your varmint?
Yes, sir. Anything else, Jim?
Vamoose, boy, vamoose.
Yes, sir.
You listen to what I tell you, Kendall. I got 100,000 head down Texas way. Anybody wants to buy from me... They want to buy from me, they come down and drive them up to Cheyenne themselves. That way I sell them before the fat comes off them, you see there? Before the fat comes off.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But sure it makes sense. Sure, you ain't drinking.
No, thank you very much. Never before lunch.
Look here. It ain't every man who gets to drink with Buck Wharton.
I can't tell you how honored I am.
Well, that's all right, boy. I like you. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You doing anything this afternoon?
Not particularly.
All right, then you take a ride with me and little men over to Laramie.
Laramie? But that's 50 miles from here, isn't it?
Well, sure, a couple hours is all.
Oh, you mean on the train.
That's right, on the train. I got a little business over in Laramie that a fella there needs stomping on. I got to meet little men for dinner now. You be at the railroad station at 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock, you hear me? Hey, Chase, you ain't paid for them drinks.
Well, no, I...
That's all right, pay for them.
Buck Wharton had all the finesse of a ton of coal. But at the same time, the old reprobate fascinated me. And so, promptly at 2 o'clock, I found myself waiting at the railroad station. On a siding was an engine and one car.
You be waiting here at 7. You hear me, boy? Hey, Kendall! Kendall, this here's a little man. Me and say hello to Kendall.
Mr. Kendall, Mrs. hello.
Wharton.
Buck told me he was coming with us. I think it's just fine.
Have you ever rode an engine before, Kendall?
No.
Well, you're going to today.
Well, I've always wanted to.
Boy, when you're with Buck Wharton, you do what you've always wanted to do. That's because I could buy and sell any jughead in this whole territory.
Buck owns part of the railroad, don't you, honey?
Yeah, and before I'm through, I'm going to own all of it. Me and you riding the car, I don't want you getting no cinders and dust on that there new dress. Set me back $300, that dress did. $300.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, beautiful.
I'm glad you like it.
Yes, y'all fired up, Hank. Yes, sir, Mr. Wharton. You go ahead back in the car now, honey. We'll see you in Laramie.
All right, honey. Now, you drive careful now.
You own this train, Mr. Wharton?
Well, of course I own it, but I'm a rich man. A rich man. Kendall, you call me Buck. You got a handle?
Yes, J.B.
Well, then let's get on this iron horse, J.B. Afternoon, Mr. Wharton.
Hank, this is J.B.
Nice to make your acquaintance. You got them rifles?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, doggone buffalo, J.B. The cussed things stray all over the tracks. Heard of them knocked the engine off the rails one time. You remember that, Hank?
Yeah, sure do, Mr. Wharton.
Well, let's get started, boy. Hey, J.B., you want to blow the whistle?
Oh, I'd be delighted to.
All right, rope go ahead there. I'll take the throttle. You fire, Hank.
Yeah.
Hey, did you telegraph through to Laramie to make sure there ain't no other train in my way and coming at us?
I sure did, Mr. Wharton.
All right. Boy, thunder, boy!
Buck, if you come over to this side, you'll see.
Son of a gun. Bushwhacked!
All right. You all climb down out of there. Me and the boys got you covered. Good. And you all try something, and there are going to be windows in your skull.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. In fiction, one of the things we enjoy most is the building up of suspense as to the outcome. Every Sunday, CBS Radio brings you a story in which this uncertainty accumulates until the final smashing climax of suspense. Let this reminder serve as an invitation to listen later today as suspense comes to you over most of these CBS radio stations. After that, you'll need no reminder that every Sunday, CBS Radio brings you another thrilling tale, well calculated to keep you in suspense. And now, we return you to Anthony Ellis' production of Frontier Gentlemen.
Fellas carrying shooting irons.
What do you mean by this? Listen here, boy. You know who I am?
No, I don't know who you are, old-timer. Who are you?
I'm Buck Horton. That's who I am.
Well, I declare. They say you got more money than the yellow dog God flees. I'm proud to meet up with you, Mr. Wharton. Now, you know who I am?
You're a churn-dash calf who ain't got no better sense than
I'm Willie Ringo. If you don't shut that flannel mouth of yours, I'm going to cut out your tongue. Who are you?
Hank Marble.
And you?
J.B. Kendall.
I see. What y'all carrying in a railroad car?
Nothing. We're on our way to Laramie.
Farrell?
Yeah, Willie.
You take two of the boys. See what's in that railroad car.
Sure, Willie.
Now, Mr. Wharton, just how much money is you carrying?
Listen to me, boy. If you think I'm going to give you any of my money, you're a thinker's puner, and I figure.
Don't you get me on a prod now, you old duffer.
Old duffer? Old duffer? Why, you goslin chin young squirt. You ought to be playing the string of spools. Just a sawed-off bucket, doggy. That's all it is.
Or leave him lay, mister.
Mrs. Wharton, he's all right.
Oh, no, he ain't. What did you do to him?
I put a knot in his head. Wow. You mean a filly like you is that old dog's wife?
I sure am, Sonny.
Lady, don't you never call me Sonny. You hear?
Hey, Willie, let's get out of here. There ain't nothing in the car. We can move up the lot and wait for the next one.
Shut your mouth, Harold. We got plenty of time. Guys, I got an idea. There's good diggings right here. Al, Frank, you pick up that old man and put him in the car. Then you get that boulder off that track, too.
What are you gonna do with him?
Why, ma'am, he's so rich that I figure I could convince him to part with some of his money. You, mister, what'd you say your name was?
I said my name was Kendall.
I see. All right, you and this engine driver, you get back on that thing. Pharaoh, stay with them. You see they keep a good head of steam up. Soon as Mr. Wharton's agreeable, we'll start for Laramie. You come with me, little lady.
No, I won't. You get...
Let's go. All right. Stand over there, both of you. This thing got enough steam, like Willie says?
For a while.
You want to stay alive, you see it keeps that way.
Where are the rifles Buck was talking about when we left Cheyenne?
Up there. There, I've seen him. See up there on the rack?
Loaded?
Yeah.
When do you have to throw on more wood?
A few minutes?
We'll wait.
Mr. Kendall.
Yes?
I'm going to have to stoke.
All right. Tell him.
here, mister. I better get some wood on. The fire's going down.
Go ahead.
I'll help.
No.
It's better with two. Fire goes down pretty quick.
All right. Watch yourself.
While I'm loading the firebox, you put it in reverse. Then open up the throttle. We'll get them off balance.
Back up all the way to Cheyenne?
Yes. If he comes to, hit him again.
All right.
You take his gun. I'll use one of the rifles.
Hey, listen, I can't see so good going backwards like this.
Don't worry about it.
We could back right in another train. There's one down this way out of Cheyenne in a while.
We'll meet it. Listen. Is there any way for me to go back to the carriage?
Well, you can crawl over the tender. You better not, though.
I can try. I started to crawl over the wood-loaded tender toward the carriage. The little train jumping, rocking over the uneven rails. Hey! It was a sudden lurch that saved me. The bullet struck a log beside my arm. I felt a splinter tear my cheek, and I fired back. I hit one of them, saw him fall off the carriage platform. Then Willie Ringo darted back inside. I made a jump for the platform. There were two of them inside now. I stood to the side of the open door and waited.
Hey, Kendall! Kendall!
What is it?
You stop the train, I'll make a deal with you.
You throw out your guns.
How do I know you won't come in and shoot?
You don't.
I'll kill the old man and the girl.
It won't do you any good. You'll die for it.
Kendall! Kendall, if there's Buck, listen to me, boy. You gotta stop. There's another train coming toward us. I can see it.
Ringo, give your guns to Mr. Wharton and I'll stop the train.
All right, all right.
All right, you better get out of here, Buck.
Yes, he's coming up fast.
No, that's all right. Hank has seen it.
Jump, Mr. We're all gonna get killed.
You stay right where you are, sonny, or I'll blow out your lamp.
Tell you, J.B., I want to tell you, boy, I want to tell you, me and little men here, we owe you a lot.
We sure are grateful, Mr. Kendall. Why, you saved our lives.
You sure did. Money just can't buy what you done for us, J.B. Money can't buy what you done for us, so I ain't going to insult you by offering any. But I want to tell you, I stand here, boy, and I tell you, if there's ever anything, and when I say that, I mean anything, anything at all. If there is, you say the word, boy. You hear me? You say the word.
He means that, Mr. Kendall. Anything.
I'm a rich man, J.B. A rich, rich man. I can buy and sell any living man in these parts. Now, boy, don't you be bashful. You just name it.
No, you don't have to give me anything.
Yeah, this train. How about this little train? She's yours, what? Boy. She's yours.
No, no, thanks.
Yeah, the company paid for her, and I'd give her to you, J.B. She is yours.
But what am I going to do with the train?
Sell her back to the company. I'll make them give her to me, and we can split the profit. Now, that's what you call a business transaction, boy. Come on down to the club. I'll let you buy a drink on it.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear as Buck Wharton, Jack Crucian as Hank, Eddie Firestone as Willie Ringo, Harry Bartell as Carrie Chase, and Virginia Gregg as Min Wharton. Sundays, on most of these same stations, it's the FBI in Peace and War. Here's drama that pulls no punches, revealing how unsung heroes of the Federal Bureau of Investigation operate to track down criminals and saboteurs. Listen later in the day as the Dragnet closes on another Public Enemy.
Was episode number 14 of The Frontier Gentleman, titled Daddy Buck Bucks. A little train excitement for you this Wednesday morning. Again, you heard starring John Danner. Parley Bear was in there. It seems like there wasn't a Western made in the 40s and 50s that didn't have Parley Bear in it. Coming up next, Marco. Marco's here. So wake up, sleepyhead. We'll follow the grand hour. Programming note for next week, I'm going to play some Easter-related programming. Stay tuned for that. And I'm going to play out here with Jerry and Norma Stillwell. I'm playing the band off the band that most people would recognize this time of year, with Chickadees and Finches for Spring. This is from Bird Songs of Dooryard Field and Forest. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
Carolina Chickadee uses several high-pitched notes in different songs. Compared to the Carolina Chickadee, the notes of the black-capped chickadee are lower pitched. One black-cap often answers another in a different key. Here is the song of a white-breasted nuthatch. The voice of the red-breasted nuthatch is weak and nasal. Here are the bubbling songs of two house wrens. Buick Wren songs are high-pitched and varied.